Where Nobody Knows Your Name is not recorded in front of a live studio audience. Hello and welcome to Where Nobody Knows Your Name, a Cheers podcast. I'm John.
And I'm James.
And James, this is a good episode. This is Madame Lacala.
It's a fun one, and I've got facts straight in there. Facts around a coincidence, which is exciting.
Well, tell me your facts.
Season 10, episode 3. And the air date is the 10th and then 3rd of October.
Yeah, this episode was released on the 3rd of October, 1991, James. It was written by Feef Sutton, who we've seen quite a few episodes written by now. He knows the characters inside out. It's a good episode, directed by Tom Moore, who, again, having seen this episode, he knocks out the park with this one.
Yes, that name sounds familiar. He's done a few episodes.
But I tell you what, James, I really enjoyed this episode, Madame Lacala. It's a fun one. It's a fast one.
I thought you'd enjoy this episode, yeah.
But having mentioned Feef Sutton, he knows these characters inside out. And there's so many small incidental jokes through this episode that I'm really looking forward to getting into it because it's jam-packed.
It is. Packed full of jam. Yes.
We can tell that it's going to be jam-packed because the cold open is very short.
3 lines.
We can probably just put the whole cold open in, I reckon.
Cheers is filmed before a live studio audience.
I got something to add to the conversation. A 100 megaton warhead detonated over the city of Boston. The results would be so horrific that the survivors would envy the dead.
We weren't having a conversation.
Well, then food for thought.
And as we heard there, Cliff is just sort of blabbling.
He's blabbling, yeah.
He's blabbling on about the destruction of Boston.
Yeah, which is, again, coincidental, because in the Fallout game, which is about nuclear fallout, it's set in Boston, you go down into Cheers and there's skeletons of Cliff and Norm.
There you go. Maybe the survivors would envy the dead if Cliff and Norm are still at Cheers. Yeah. In their iconic spots.
Yep, and that they are.
But as we've said, we've got a jam-packed episode, James, and we kick off the main episode with a reminder about Woody's acting career because he's opened in a show the previous night.
Yes. He enters Cheers, having been in the plane, and Rebecca didn't go, but Mark Levin loved it.
Is that your reviews? Arsenic and the Old Lace, which I've not heard of before.
I've heard of it. I wouldn't be able to claim what it's about. But we can kind of figure it out from context.
It says it's a screwball black comedy on the old Wikipedia.
Similar to The Lady Killers, I guess.
By the sounds of it, it sounds like the lady is the killer. Murderous old ladies killing people.
Ah, yes.
So it's sort of an Uno reverse on The Lady Killers.
Yeah.
There's not much killing in The Lady Killers, is there?
No, they just keep trying to kill the old lady, but they don't succeed.
It's more about robbing banks, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think calling it the bank robbers wouldn't be as enticing.
Anyhow, it sounds like it was a fun play. It sounds like it was a farcical play in its own right. I suppose a black comedy, a dark comedy, kind of is normally quite farcical. But you mentioned that Mark Levin went. Cliff says that, and this is where I'm saying, like, those little incidental jokes that are written through this by Feef are so good because you just have Cliff in a very small moment saying, oh, yeah, Ma loved the play. Sweet old ladies being cold-blooded murderesses. It tickled her funny bone. And then he was like, I woke up at 3 a.m. to see her in the sitting room in a rocking chair, sort of rocking back and forth, making this low, gurgling chuckle. And then just to punctuate that joke with, she loves the theater. It's like just that in itself is written so well. It's just a well-crafted joke that you get because you know the characters, you know?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, if you didn't know the characters, you'd be like, what's wrong with this?
But it's also like we also get this sort of, we build off this dynamic of Rebecca and Woody because, as you mentioned, Rebecca didn't go. And she's like, oh, you should have told me. And Woody's like, I did. You said you would come. I reserved it. Seats for you on the front row and all this kind of stuff. And it's sort of so built into those characters as well.
She goes, oh, then I was sick. And Woody goes, oh, are you feeling better? She goes, so-so. And Woody's sweet, sweet, naive Woody believes her.
In sort of tandem to this, and this is how like tightly this is written, we also get the mention that Madame LaRosa, another sort of long-stead... Madame LaZora.
Yes.
A long-stead character in Cheers who's sort of been... appeared in name and then was realised in character as well in an episode and has sort of been the legacy of the show, has called to sort of say that she needs to meet Carla, which understandably freaks Carla out.
It's a bit foreboding, isn't it?
As she says, she must have a horrible premonition of me getting hurt or killed or pregnant. The three big things.
The unholy trinity.
Frasier says, why don't you give her a call? Carla says, and this is how it's so nicely written, the sort of two stories very much in tandem. Oh, what if she's warning me against phones? And sort of Frasier says, like, warning against phones. And as he says this, we see Woody sort of
clothesline himself.
Yeah, gets clotheslined by the phone cable and is sort of out for the count, flat on the floor. Very much sort of like a football injury, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And he goes, I can't move, can't move. Then someone comes in going, reviews are in. Up he gets.
Yeah, he darts across. I feel like, I mean, I can't fully remember it, James, but I feel like he does like seven somersaults over the bar. Well, he's always jumping over the bar. He ran so quick, I think he sort of did somersaults over the bar tops.
He could well have done.
But it's the reviews are in for his show.
That they are. Mixed review, I think you'd say?
I don't think there's much of a mix about it.
It's called a charming romp and a deft ensemble.
The show's got high praise apart from one aspect of the show.
Which is Woody.
Woody Boyd is weak, is the comment.
Which ain't too bad.
Well, I mean, it's not great, is it?
It's not great, but it could be worse. <You know?
laughs> Well, what if it was Woody Doib is weak? Is that worse?
I somehow take that better and go, well, I don't know who this Woody Doib person is. I'm Woody Boyd.
But Woody is now sort of quite... He's put off the idea of doing the show a little bit, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, which often actors sometimes do. They refuse to read their reviews. Some of them refuse to even watch their own work. I don't think Michael Caine watches his own work for that reason.
Do you know what, James?
What?
3 episodes in, I think at least 2 of the episodes have had a Michael Caine reference. Maybe all 3. I'm not sure yet.
And I'll keep it going. And sometimes it will be obtuse, sometimes it will be subtle.
Actually, even in our season 9 review, maybe you kicked off there with your Michael Caine impression.
We've moved from Stephen King.
All the early days of season 1.
Yeah. We were so naive.
Woody is sort of reluctant to be in this show anymore because I suppose it's not constructive criticism. It's just a very blunt, flippant comment to say Woody Doib is weak and he doesn't know how to process that really.
Ken Levine had an interesting thing about this. Beyond writing for Cheers and many other shows, also wrote plays. And on his own podcast, he said that when people watch a play or any media and they say that, oh, it fell down in the second act or the second act didn't carry it through, he goes, they may be right, but they don't necessarily know why. All they know is that something in the second act was wrong. And in their opinion of what something is, this is the reason why. But they've not used the mechanics of playwriting, so they're guessing as to why it's gone wrong. So I think it, yeah, very much ties into what you're saying, as in it's not constructive criticism. They just think something is wrong.
I think that you hear that phrase so much, and I think that's actually probably like one of the clear distinctions between cinema and theatre,
yeah,
and television as well, is because of the interval.
Yes,
people get this break to form their own expectation of how it should end. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes, like when I watch a film, you just process it all in one go. The ending is very much in control. There's no break to let you process story, character, and expectation. Well, not as much break, you know. You obviously do it a bit. You notice moments. The old Chekhov's gun and you go, that's going to come back. But in a play, you sometimes have that interval. You have a little ice cream and you go, wow, I think this is going to happen. So an interesting idea there. So Woody is unsure about his return to the theatre, and he also thinks that he's let down his castmates as well. But at the same time, we get the arrival of Madame LaRosa.
Lazora.
I'll never get it right, James. Madame Lazora has arrived at Cheers, and she's there to talk to Carla. And we find out, James, she's retiring.
She's retiring, going to Florida. Georgia Brown is on point as Madame Lazora.
Yeah, she definitely commands the scene.
Big presence.
But this is where, I mean, like, we get all of these little jokes as well, because she commands the scene very much, but we get all of these interjections from other characters.
Yep.
I sense the tortured anguish of many lost souls screaming for release.
That's probably me. I'd kill Bossa for breakfast.
And then he does a little burp later on. Carla says to Sam, get the lady a drink. She says, I'll have a beer. And Norm goes, wow, she read my mind.
I did it. Yes, you're a natural. And more, you will be able to see the spirits of the dead are all around you. And very soon, you will see them lingering in the shadows of this very bar, just as I do.
Oh, that's just Lilith. Everyone makes that mistake. Oh.
But it's such a dynamically written script that utilizes every single character in the scene.
Oh, yeah. Even, we'll get onto it, even a recurring barfly who's not been in much but has a great moment.
But before we get onto their return, we get the news that Madame Lazora is retiring and that she has heard from her spirit that guides her, Princess Katya, that the mantle is going to be passed over to Carla.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which I think is an interesting development.
You sounded so much like Moss from the IT Gun. It's this very nerdy character who works in IT and he goes to watch a football game and he goes, my, that's an interesting development when a goal is scored. But yes, no, it's an intriguing one. Not an entirely surprising one. I think, you know, if someone said, this was a plot of Cheers. If you knew, as you said, if you knew the characters well up to this point, you go, that makes sense that would happen, you know. Carla is very spiritual.
She's incredibly spiritual, and there's a great line, which is, whoa, I'm going to be a psychic. Who could have predicted that? And she goes around and starts predicting people's futures or pasts or something like that, and she gets it wrong initially.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, she tries to read Sam's mind, actually. And she gets it wrong.
To be fair, she lists the three things that we thought probably Sam was thinking about. Hair, women, and car.
No, he was thinking about Planet of the Apes.
They missed the ending. Didn't know
I'm
what
sure
happened.
I'm sure he's watched it before.
Yeah, he forgot.
I feel like it's already been said he's watched it before in this series, but I don't know. But he finds the ending out and is blown away by the end.
Oh, Sam. What are you like?
Didn't have an interval to go, I might be Earth.
But
an interval in Planet of the Apes, you'd wreck it.
Well, my sister, actually, and she's quite perceptive. In Only Murders in the Building, for example, the comedy mystery show, she predicted the murderers for both season 2 and 3 within 3 episodes of a 10-episode series. So very perceptive. But she... in watching like The Twilight Zone or anything which there's a surprise, predicts it very early on. And I don't know how she does it, but I suspect it's because of these old sci-fi things, Twilight Zone, Planet of the Apes, a lot of things have taken inspiration from them and used them as kind of templates where it's now very evident as to things which people are showing, but more accurately, what they're not showing.
Very perceptive.
Very perceptive.
There you go. Maybe your sister could read some minds.
Maybe. I think she just wouldn't care enough to do so.
But after initially failing to read Sam's mind, Carla gets a bit down and Sam goes, oh, try again. I wasn't trying, kind of thing. And then she goes around and sort of predicts very accurately or reads into their past to sort of identify Sam's old pet as a Labrador, sort of describes his mother, goes around the bar and sort of very accurately says to Fraser, you read a lot of books, but you had no friends. Says to Norm, you had a lot of friends, but you read no books. And says to Cliff, oh, God.
The horror.
And then leaves very excited to sort of pursue this new career as a psychic.
How do you explain that, Dr. Crane?
Why, ask me, Woody.
Do I know something that no one else knows? I mean, we all saw what we saw. I mean, do you enjoy having me explain every little thing that happens? You know, I mean, just, let's ask the esteemed Dr. Crane. Yes, he'll know. Well, I'm sorry, Woody. I have no answer for you. Frankly, I'm downright scared. Tell the truth, I got a little creeped out when she got that dog's name.
Sam comes over and goes, oh, I was just lying.
Yeah, humoring.
I didn't want to. It wasn't humoring, but he didn't. He felt bad for her not being able to do this, so he sort of went along with it a bit.
Often, the whole, and it's. I'm very tempted to tell them no. You know, when mantelists go, you had a pet growing up. It was this name because of the whole internet password thing. I'm tempted to, even if they get it right, just lie. You know, if Devin Brown pulled me up on stage and said this, I'm thinking, there's hundreds of people watching me right now. I'm not going to say that my first pet's name.
I'll hack your accounts, James.
Yeah, and he would and all. Lee Bradkin, the director of Woody's play, arrives at Cheers looking for him.
And Woody hides under the desk or the bar.
The bar. He's not very good at improv, this Woody Boyd character.
Woody's not too bad. I think Rebecca lets him down.
Yes, scene partner.
Is Woody Boyd here?
Tell him I'm not here.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bradkin, he's not here.
How did you know my name was Bradkin?
Tell him it was a lucky guess.
Lucky guess.
Is that person crouching by the side of your leg?
Okay, give me a minute on this one.
Lee Bracken convinces Woody to come back and kind of says, you're an actor, you have to be open to criticism, you have to define your own feelings. You can't let other people tell you you're weak and be weak because of it. Which I think is a good sort of motivational prep talk, you know?
I will say a great moment of improv that I saw. There was this improv duo called the Just Us League, and they often do superhero and Marvel-related stuff. And they were doing a show down in London, which Troy and I have mentioned on this podcast that we went to. So I tagged him on the thing on Facebook, the post about it, and he went, I'll think about it. And they responded, no, Troy, you're meant to say yes and. Got the banter down. And I think that convinced him to come.
Maybe that's where Rebecca went wrong. She didn't say yes and, she just repeated what Woody said.
Yeah, and the director does try to motivate Woody. Woody starts making notes.
Yes and, he gets out of control a little bit. And he starts to sort of get down a little bit of a spiral, I think you'd say.
Yeah, he lets the anger flow through him.
Write down your true feelings as they come to you, okay? Now, how do you feel right now?
I feel weak.
Not what other people tell you to feel. Do you really feel weak?
I feel strong.
Darn right you do. And how do you feel about that critic?
Am angry.
So, how are you going to get even?
TP his house.
No, by giving the best performance you can give. Look, I talked the critic into coming back tonight, Woody. If you can change his mind, he'll say so in tomorrow's column. Now, Woody, how do you feel about going on tonight?
Feel great.
And how do you feel about your fellow actors?
Them better than other actors.
Well, Woody...
Can direct better than Bradkin.
Hey. Still got a long way to go. I'll see you tonight.
Is jealous of my youth and good looks.
And the director just leaves, hoping that Woody will come back with best intentions. Carla enters in her new outfit, spiritualist Carla.
Oh, is that sort of a new thing now?
Like Biker Crane.
Biker Crane, spiritualist Carla. I like it. Yep. She's got a scarf.
It's the mirror universe room.
She's come in and she's excited, I'd say.
Yeah. Have you ever been to some kind of spiritualist or palmist?
I went to a ghost thing recently, James.
Yeah, that's what I was leading to, because you said you'd have a spooky story.
It was a bit spooky, but it was a ghost event, and it was this quite popular podcast in the UK on BBC called Uncanny. I went to the Uncanny Live event, which was actually staged like a sort of show. It wasn't people sat down just talking.
Ah.
So there was a sort of big sort of shed type thing on stage because the guy does his podcast in his shed. But then it all opened up and there was like projections of these accounts of people telling their ghost stories.
Yeah.
And then they brought experts on stage. But what was quite nice about it, James, was the podcast and the show get an expert who tries to debunk it and an expert who is very much pro.
Ah, yes.
The fan. So there's sort of these two camps within this sort of fan base of believers and skeptics. And I think that's quite nice within the context of this episode as well, because Carla is a true believer, you know? And Frasier is very much a skeptic, and they're both trying to find the roots of like their both of their beliefs. Quite nice about this podcast is the fact that they sort of say that because the host takes a sort of non-stance.
Very impartial.
They say, yeah. I've never seen a ghost. I'd love to see a ghost, but until I have, I can only sort of sit in the middle. But what both sides agree on, and it's very much quite a sort of nice atmosphere, is the fact that these people who have experienced this fully believe it. And whether they've seen a ghost or not, the psychological implications of it and the fear associated and the memories associated are very much real.
Okay. Yeah. No, I can appreciate and respect that too.
And I just thought it was quite an interesting setup with Carla now taking over this role of the psychic. And she enters Cheers, ready to leave Cheers forever, and instead decides to set up her psychic camp within the pool room.
Belief is a very powerful thing. And whatever someone believes in, it's a very powerful thing. For some people, I read some quote about it attributed to Major Kira, a Star Trek character. Faith, if you don't have it, you can't understand it. And if you do, no explanation is necessary. It's quite a good quote.
Do you want to hear a quote from me as well?
Yeah.
This one says, because I gotta have faith. I gotta have faith because I gotta have faith, the faith of faith. I gotta have faith.
Is that by the Honorable George Michael?
That's by George Michael, yeah.
That song is on our playlist.
from his song, Faith.
Faith. It's on our playlist.
No, in all seriousness, James, that was a very nice quote that you brought out. And I think it sort of reads this idea of so intrinsic to Carla's character is this belief and this spirituality. And that's why she's so heavily invested in this, you know?
Very fair, yeah.
How does she clear the pool room, James? Because I know you're excited to say.
She goes, is that Michelle Pfeiffer outside? Cue a mass of men running out. But not everyone is cleared out by that. So she goes, and who's that with her? Kevin Costner? And then we get Barry Zajac as Barry running out going, where? And curling his hair back. And we haven't seen much of him. But the only other line we have from him is in regards to Jean-Marie Bollier, where there's a picture of her in some magazine. And they go, those legs go on for days or something like that. And Barry goes, I'll switch.
He's good. And I think this is, you know, the bar is so dynamic in this episode and so full of people that those moments where we're getting callbacks to characters that have very small roles, you know, Paul has quite a big role in this episode as well. It really does embrace that bar atmosphere.
I also like how, in comparison to, say, season one, the bar has come on leaps and bounds. Mm. You know, they were worried about it being a gay bar. Now everyone in the bar is fully aware of Barry's sexuality and you know, drinking in to be involved in their pool games and banter with the gang. It's wholesome.
Very wholesome. But after they're cleared down, it means that Carla can set up camp and sort of start her career. But before she gets to sort of start this dream, Sam tells her that he made it up. And he agreed to try and make her feel better, but actually he never had a dog. And that wasn't his mother, she described. And she said, well, there must be someone in the bar. And says, did anyone here have a Labrador? And she goes, well, it must be more than just me. And realizes she's just sort of talked about her own childhood.
She's read her own mind.
Yeah. And she loses faith a bit. And she says this to Madame Lazora, turns to her and goes, Carla, I'm so proud of that you've had the courage to be honest with me. And then goes, I've been a fraud my whole life.
Yep. And again, Georgia Brown does this to perfection.
And this is where she reveals, you know, all you need is a spooky voice.
I'm so proud of you for having the courage to be honest with me. Oddly enough, this relates to the information I was about to give you.
What's that?
I'm a complete fraud. Now, just have time to work on your spooky voice.
What?
Your spooky voice. You have to learn to speak lower. Talk more from the diaphragm.
You're a fraud? All these years you've been leading me on.
And this is quite shattering for Carla, really.
But what it comes down to is the same thing we've said about faith for faith for faith, is that people believe things. Some people are very devout in their beliefs, and whether or not they're right or wrong, if someone can act as a conduit to provide support through those beliefs, then this isn't meant to be a pun, but all power to them, you know? If someone believes something and someone can help them by using something they strongly believe in, it's no harm. I suppose it becomes a harm when you're swindling.
Yeah, that's the difference, isn't it? And we kind of see this unfold as the scene progresses, because a guy named Bob turns up at Madame LaRosa's.
Nope, you keep getting LaZora.
LaZora. LaRosa is Karate Kid. Madame LaZora.
Daniel LaRusso.
Oh, man, what? I'm all over the place this episode. Too many owls. La Carla witnesses that Bob comes in, and she kind of sees a bit of herself in him, I suppose, because he's coming in looking for guidance, looking for advice, and is willing to pay for it, and gives him some advice.
She gives him some advice. Before we play that advice, because advice is a weird way to put it, but before we give her that advice, it's worth pointing out that Madame LaZora has a box of trinkets that she does her swindling with. And in those trinkets, she's got various things, but some of which are tarot cards. The tarot cards are Aleister Crowley's Thoth. They're a deck which Aleister Crowley had, who was a cult mentalist, and illustrated by Lady Frieda Harris. Aleister Crowley, the person, died in 1947, and there was a Ozzy Osbourne song about him called Mr. Crowley.
Well, that felt like a deep dive. It's not his actual deck, though, is it?
It was the deck that he used. It may have been redesigned after it.
Wow. There you go, James. You zoomed in on those pixels and you found something magical.
Yep. He was only born up road, born in Leamington Spa.
Oh.
Yep.
His cards made it all the way to Boston.
But yeah, that song's going in the playlist as well.
Do you reckon now's a good point to talk about the cast, James? Because I think we've seen everyone.
We have. The spectres at the feast, you could say. Spectres at the farce. We, of course, have Georgia Brown as Madame LaZora. This is her final episode, sadly, because she's gone off to Florida. Jeffrey Richmond as Lee Bradkin. He previously appeared in Season 8, Episode 9, Two Girls for Every Boy. So it's good that they're bringing back the same director. It's a nice touch. Jim Brochu as Bob. He also appeared in All My Children, Law and Order, Kojak, Wings, The Young and the Restless, The Good Fight, and many more. Barry Zajac is Barry, Peter Schreiner is Pete, Joseph Goose, Susan Advance, Joe Bauman, Don Bennett, and Robert Buckingham are all uncredited as bar patrons. There's quite a few bar patrons in this episode, but those are the only ones which managed to get their name known.
Do you know what I like about this episode? Is it brings back three characters.
Lee, Madame LaZora, and Barry.
And brings them back so sort of effortlessly and very in keeping with the episodes. It knows the universe and show it's in, if you know what I mean, and takes advantage of that in a way that brings people back in a very natural way, that you don't really overthink it.
Yep, exactly. And if you hadn't seen those characters before, other than Madame LaZora, you wouldn't even question them. Mm. Yeah. So Carla gives this speech, which we'll play.
Tell me. What do you see?
Can you see something?
Yeah, I can see something. I can see that you're a sucker. A big dope. For 20 years, you've been forking over your hard-earned cash to a sleazy con artist. You have been taken in by the cheapest, most obvious scam in the world just because you wanted to believe it. I see that you should wise up, chump.
Then she storms off. But not before Madame LaZora asks for $50 from Bob.
Yeah.
Which she obliges for. Strange.
Mm. But I think that's the thing of, like, Bob's so engrossed in it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how long he's been coming to Madame LaZora, but I think it's implied about 20 years.
Yeah, well, it says, it implies about 20 years, but it's also revealed that he is her first ever client as well.
And Carla started seeing Madame Lazarus since she was a teenager, so it's going to be at least 20 years.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Facts.
Carla arrives back at Cheers, and Pete asks what's wrong with her, because she's visibly upset. And Cliff says, well, many things, but he's the only one brave enough to say it. She's not got enough bran.
Again, this is another little moment where it's written for the character so well, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and then he's promptly pushed off his chair because that's what Carla does.
And then she goes and plays Greensleeves quite sort of...
slowly.
Slowly and statically on the piano in a sort of slightly haunting way.
Woody enters, and the critic in the newspaper thinks he's much improved, but his fellow actors read his notebook and got upset. It's a list of grievances. It's basically what Woody's compiled there.
He's written a little book which sort of critiques all of his colleagues and co-stars in a way that isn't particularly favourable.
Well, I was going to compare it to the Byrne book for Mean Girls.
Yes, it is a bit like that, yeah. But Fraser says, you wouldn't feel too bad if you found out that I said...
a snobby know-it-all windbag.
And Fraser goes, I'd be quite upset. And you just see Woody sort of subtly rip a page out and scrunch it up, which is a great little moment.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's how Fraser got upset and offended. But he's got a job to do. Yep. He sees Carla in distress and he goes, I can't think of these mean things Woody said to me. I'm not a snobby know-it-all windbag. I'll go help Carla and tell her that I told her so. No, he goes over and sees that she is sort of visibly upset and goes over to try and console her and find out what's gone on. And actually, it's rare we get a moment like this between Carla and Fraser.
Yeah, because they have very different beliefs.
We've talked about the skeptic and the believer. They're very much the two archetypes on that spectrum, you know?
Yes.
They couldn't be further apart. And I think this moment that sort of unites them a little bit for Fraser to come over and kind of say, I told you so, but in a very sort of endearing way and sort of a consoling way to try and make sure she's all right. And there's a lovely conversation there between the two of them. And he says, don't give her the power to destroy your entire belief system. And he says that the mystic world that has given you so much comfort may well exist. And I think there's this slight sort of conceit from him to say and realize that belief is important for people.
Yep, this is a very profound episode. Yeah.
But after this quite sort of endearing conversation between the two of them, Fraser says, sort of, you know, this has been a bad experience, but you should profit from this experience. When he says profit, he means learn something. He means grow as a person.
Yes.
Carla's ears prick up and she goes, anyone with a funny voice and a fancy scarf can make 50 bucks from an idiot. And then goes, I can do a spooky voice. I've got a scarf. And then she says, gather round, calls up all these people in the bar, goes into the pool room and goes, thanks, Fraser. And Fraser just sort of does a sort of, well, I guess my work here is done.
Accepts it.
He accepts it. And I think he realizes that he's done, I think what he wanted to do worked because he might not have got the result of Carla.
Solace.
Her solace and coming to terms with necessarily what's happening in the moment, but he's restored her faith and belief. And more so because now she sees a little bit of opportunity there as well. That sounds like trivia to me, James.
All right, Cliff. No, we haven't seen Woody's play. We hear it's good. Yeah. Bye. But as usual, before we open our letters, we have to give a shout out to our norms on Patreon. So this goes out to Treb Curry. If you want that special norm treatment, then check out our Patreon page for that and so much more.
Well, I'll tell you what, James, speaking of Woody's play, he has been announced to be making a stage performance in London for a new show coming out. What is the show called, James?
Death of a Salesman?
No, he is going to be starring...
Guess, though.
It is a good guess. He's starring in David Ireland's play Ulster American, which is coming to the London Riverside Studios from December onwards. And his co-star is going to be Andy Serkis.
Oh, might go watch this.
They're reuniting after working together, not as actors, but as director and actor in Venom Let There Be Carnage. So maybe a different speed this time round.
No, that sounds good, actually.
Yeah, so some exciting news there for the acting world of Woody Harrelson.
Speaking of Woody, what does Woody write in his list of emotions?
Oh.
What does the list say? He goes through a few different things.
Well, he does start with weak.
Yep.
strong. He goes straight to the opposite, doesn't he? Weak, strong, and then I kind of...
lost track.
Yeah.
Weak, strong, angry, TP his house when asked how he'll respond to the reviewer. Feel great. I'm better than other actors. Can direct better than Brankin. And then when Brankin Liu, he was what he also wrote, is jealous of my youth and good looks.
There you go. That, I don't think you can count that all as emotions. In this episode, James, we learn of Princess Katia, the spirit that guides Madame Lazora. Can you tell me a bit about her?
She was a Romanian princess who was burnt at the stake.
Yes, a 17th century Romanian princess who was burned at the stake, but she keeps her sense of humour, which is good.
Final question about Madame Lazora. I like how these have kind of worked as segues. What are the contents of Lazora's box?
Oh, some stones, some pebbles.
Crystals is probably the closest.
That feels right.
There's more.
The deck of cards, tarot cards.
Tarot cards, yeah, yeah. Two more things.
I don't think I'm going to get them, James.
All right. Precious crystals, windows to the unseen future, tarot cards, ancient diviners of the fortune, the I Ching coins, symbols of oriental wisdom, and the moist towelettes, because you get a lot of trade off the street in this business. And what we've got here is a nice letter. It's the final message from Madame Lazora.
I am challenging something spooky from the beyond. That's my spooky voice, James. Did you like it?
Oh, good job.
I'm getting something from the beyond, James, and it's a sponsorship message.
That's right. It's in regards to Zencastr.
So get out your Ouija boards because we got a message coming through. I tell you what, James, I love using Zencastr because it makes our podcasting so easy.
Yes, it definitely does. It was a godsend, a spirit, something from the spirits. Yes.
I mean, we've been recording with Zencastr for nearly 4 to 5 years now. And it's always been so easy. It's almost like setting up any kind of video call. We just sit here, we have a lovely chat, and all the processing is done for us. Makes us sound excellent for all of our podcasts. Wouldn't go back to any other software. And I tell you what, James, it's all in browser as well.
Exactly. Very straightforward, much like any Zoom call. Don't need to install anything. Just need a web connection and your grand.
So if, like Madame Zalora, you want to start up your own little side hustle, do your own podcast, why not join Zencastr and start recording your episodes today? I tell you what though, James, we've got a code.
Yes, that's right. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use the code NORM.
The Ouija board saying N-O-R-M. That was a norm.
Yes, use that code and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. Because we want you to have the same easy experiences we have. And for all the podcasting you want to do, and for all the content you wish to make. It's, we want to see what you're doing. We're very grateful for your fan base, and, we want to hear what you can say.
That's the last call at the bar, James. And I a jam-packed episode, but what do you think we should be drinking for this one?
Arsenic's not a drink.
No, I don't think we should be drinking arsenic.
How about a fortune teller cocktail?
Sounds good to me. Very on topic with the episode.
Very on topic. It's a tequila-based cocktail, tequila and sherry and maraschino liqueur. So it's a strong one, but, got to have faith, John.
Yeah, you got to have faith. I suppose what would we toast this episode? I think my standout bits from this episode are Fraser and Carla coming together for that sort of ending. I think that was a really nice moment.
I suppose we'll toast to the future of season 10.
There you go. And if I look into my crystal ball, James, we'll be coming back next week. Barry will be coming back next week. And you'll be talking about season 10, episode 4, The Norm Who Came to Dinner. But until then, James, this has been Where Nobody Knows Your Name, a Cheers podcast. Thank you for listening.